So nice to have him in studio with us. Sportsnet's own Stephen Brunn, co-host of Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan and the lead podcast, new with Jeff Blair. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. I'm here, fresh as a daisy.
Yeah, you look it.
Aren't the morning hours wonder? Wouldn't Stephen Brunn and company go great in this time slot? Well, we could use a break.
Yeah, I had a kind of an interesting track. I was fishing, and they made me come back. Well, they asked me to come back. They didn't make me come back, but I was like, so I was like way up in northern Quebec.
Thus the waiters you came in with this morning.
Yeah, exactly. I've got I do have a whole fishing outfit I could dress up in today. It's just down the hall. But
go on.
So yeah, it's been kind of an odd trek the last few hours.
So you love your international soccer.
Yes,
was this ever a day that you thought you'd see? Well, my first reaction was admittedly skepticism at a joint bid because it's never been done. We've seen Euros hosted by two countries and bids put in, but we've never seen it in the World Cup, and it'll be the first of its kind.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense, especially with a 48-team tournament, right? That helps to spread it out a bit, spreads out the risk. I think that makes sense, the financial risk. Obviously, the United States could have done it on their own, but I give Victor Montagliani a fair bit of credit here. You know, he's the running CONCACAF now. He ran the Canadian Soccer Association, and he's a political animal. You know, in that world, it's a dirty, dirty political world. And I think he has, you know, he's one of the people that's helped increase Canada's influence in those, you know, in the corridors of power at FIFA. And he was a guy who pushed this idea. I didn't think I would ever see Canada host a World Cup in my lifetime. I was pretty sure I wouldn't see Canada participate in a World Cup as a team in my,
after 86.
Yeah, spent too many times following the hex or waiting, hoping we would get to the hex.
Yeah, we have an important match in Haiti.
Yeah.
And we lost.
You know, and Rash Madani sweating in Honduras and that, you know, all of those things. There was that 8-1
it's
that
always
match.
Good TV right
That's
there.
My yeah, uh-huh.
Especially in high def.
I think it's great. I know you had Jason DeVos on. For people who are involved in this game long-term in this country, this is all the cliches apply. This is a watershed, and I've been talking a lot in the last hour a bit about 94. I covered that World Cup, and the first one I covered, and what that did in the United States. You know, we kind of only realized after, like now, if you look back and you say, you know, that was a foreign sport being played, you know, followed by foreign supporters who came into the United States and played in football stadiums, and Americans had no idea what that thing was, and what. You look where soccer is in the United States now. MLS came directly out of that, but also the American men's national team became as significant. They're not in this World Cup, but they made some noise in the World Cup. Their supporters, their fans, you know, there are more tickets sold. There are more, aside from Russians, more Americans have bought tickets to this World Cup in Russia, and they don't have a team in it, than any other country. That happened, and that started in 94.
We've gotten so used to the way that soccer's been run and the International Olympic Committee. Between FIFA and the IOC, we have walked away with our heads shaking forever. Do we feel now that we're finally heading in a right direction? Let's face it. It ends up coming down to North America against Morocco. And I understand the vote ends up being, you know, 2-1 in favor of North America. Why would it ever come down to North America against Morocco?
Well, yeah, it's funny. As it got closer, though, the technical, you know, again, the FIFA technical committee came out and, you know, the North American bid obviously had everything over the Moroccan bid, and they have to build all the stadiums in Morocco. And it should have been an absolute rout, and it was in the end. So maybe that is proof that it's a little cleaner. But it's funny, as it got closer, you know, and you started to think, boy, okay, there's the, you know, the anti-American, anti-Trump thing that's on the go, understandably. You know, hunks of the world are not that thrilled with the United States. There is the Europeans, you know, it's a kind of almost a quasi-European bid because Morocco is so close to Europe. European television, prime time for them, it's way better than North America. And, you know, and then you kind of thought, okay, what about the, and then they got, you know, they wouldn't let the American territories vote, so Guam didn't get their vote. So there's just a bunch of stuff that started to feel like the old FIFA there, but until the moment they actually announced it, yeah, I couldn't quite believe that it was going to be fair. But it appears to have been fair.
Like, I'll never forget the Russia-Qatar day, and obviously Russia trumps England. England's the first country eliminated for this World Cup. It's happening now, and the U.S. is second to Qatar. Do you think there were people within USA Soccer that said, if we're going to try this again, we're better off amalgamating and doing a joint bid?
It's interesting.
Because like you said, they could... God, there's so many stadiums, state-of-the-art NFL stadiums, 70,000 seats for it, and that's where all the big games are going to be, quarterfinals and on. They could obviously do it themselves.
Yeah,
they're better fit to do it themselves than in 94.
It's a good question, Greg, because, you know, the other thing is that, you know, the other reason the Americans aren't popular with some people in FIFA, although some of those people are in jail now, is the, you know, that they... The FBI drove that investigation. That all the, you know, all the heavy lifting was done in the States, weirdly enough. So, you know, that probably, that's why Sepp Blatter from his, you know, whatever his, wherever he's locked up now with an ankle bracelet on, was saying,
endorsing Morocco,
right? But yeah, they certainly downplayed, you know, they downplayed the American, you saw their presentation, I guess, and I would think that was part of the tone of their pitch, which was very much about inclusiveness. You know, it wasn't, it certainly wasn't rah-rah, you know, you know,
Stars and Stripes, yeah, Eagles, apple pies.
I did love the fact that the American guy or the Moroccan guy popped up and said that, you know, it was illegal to own guns in Morocco. They played that card.
Also homosexuality, so that's great.
Yeah, I know.
Very progressive there.
They were maybe not full transparency on the Moroccan side.
Yeah.
But yeah, they
tell them what you're good at, you know?
Yeah, but it probably did help to broaden it out a little bit, you know, to have Mexico at the table, obviously a great soccer country, and have, you know, and to throw Canada a bone. Probably didn't hurt them.
All right, Ted, so the announcement is made at 6:52 this morning, and there are people in Toronto going, we got work to do.
Yes.
So what happens with the venue? There are a lot more seats needed. Is it temporary? Is it permanent? What are they going to do?
I would think they'll do with the Grey Cup, what they did with the Grey Cup, which I think that took it up to 40. I think that's probably acceptable. That's for BMO. Obviously, Commonwealth is big, so that's fine. And Commonwealth, it works really well. For a stadium of that vintage, boy, it works really well. The one I can't figure out, Elliot, you know, and again, your old hometown, but I have no idea how they're going to make the Big O work. The Big O will be, what, 50 years old in 2026? Is that correct? Yeah. And it's, you know, it feels like it's 100 years old now. Like, it's fallen down.
It feels like 100 years old when it was 10 years
old. You know, they still got, like, there's dust in there from, like, 1982 if you go, you walk around. And
you know that they had trouble when they played the women's FIFA there because of the artificial turf. They're not going to play on turf. And we don't know. Do we know that grass is actually going to grow in Olympic Stadium? The reason that there's AstroTurf at all is because they couldn't grow it in the Astrodome in Houston when they tried and it died there. And they went, what the hell do we do now? There's no guarantees that you're going to be actually able to play at Olympic Stadium.
Well, now, way back in 94, even like in the Pontiac Silverdome.
Yeah, they trucked it in for that opener.
They rolled like from a turf farm and they built a field. It might only be, you know, there's only going to be 10 matches played in Canada. So... You know, they'll divide those up whatever way they divide them up. So it might only be three matches in Montreal. They'd probably get away with that. That stadium is not wired, you know, and putting money in where the ongoing debate has been whether they have the money to knock it down, right? That's the question. They would have knocked it down. They would be knocking it down, except that it costs too much.
Well, there's a subway underneath. That's part of the problem, that they can't implode it because there's a subway connection underneath the stadium.
So it's kind of lives because it's too, you know, it's too expensive to die.
They couldn't put the lines down for the game between the Impact and Toronto FC.
Yeah. So I don't, you know, you tell me how they're going to make that one work. You know, maybe they take the roof off. I don't know. But I have no idea how that can work. It seems...
Is it possible that it ends up not being played in Montreal?
No, I am told that those three cities are the three cities.
And so Vancouver can't get back
Vancouver
in. Calgary can't get back in. They
out,
can't
right?
get back in.
Vancouver opted out. They didn't want to pay the costs involved. I think Winnipeg and Regina were sort of on the list, but then I forget whether they opted out or they were excluded. But no, these are the three cities.
And there's 13 American cities, and a lot of big. Chicago dropped out. Mm-hmm. Minneapolis, which has had a great response to MLS. Has dropped out where the Super Bowl just was. So it's an odd, eclectic mix. Like Cincinnati is in, but like I said, Chicago and some bigger, much bigger cities. There's only three cities in the Pacific time zone, and yet there's probably eight stadiums out there that could host games.
Yeah, and look, the World Cup's here. 94, the other thing about 94 was the first time where they had vast distances to cover, right? Where if you were going to go to the World Cup, you were in, it was an airplane World Cup, and that's the first time that it really happened. It won't feel like, you know, well, whether we ever see a World Cup tucked into a little European country again, I'm not sure we ever will. I think they may all be united bids or joint bids as time goes on, like the Euros are now.
And even this, the coming Euro is going to be weird with there's matches in Azerbaijan and there's matches in Sweden.
That was one of the things that Morocco kind of had going for it.
Proximity.
A little football festival, all very easy to get to.
And that is the best, right? From a fan point of view, like I covered France 98. I did a bunch of Euros in Switzerland and in Holland and Belgium, you know, those are, it's awesome, right? You just kind of hop on a train with a bunch of supporters and end up at the next match. Can't do that in the United States or in North America. So it will have a bit of a detached feel to it, but you know, that's us, right? And that's the geography of where we live. I think the best thing is going to be, I hope I see it, you know, are people driving around the city with Canadian flags on their cars instead of whatever, the cargo cult stuff. I always think of that as the, you know, the kind of, like at this, you know, I'm sure there will still be street parties for, you know, Portugal and Italy and whoever, but be nice if, and I'm not expecting us to win or maybe even win a match.
Score a goal?
I would
We're
love
going
to
get a goal. I'm taking right. that bet in two matches.
But we have obviously all the soccer fans in Canada are excited. What about all the other people? How do we get people that weren't previous soccer fans to join this excitement?
It's like the Olympics, right? Like, no one's a fan of luge, right? Really. But you can, you know, be if you wrap
it. Not even the guys in luge.
Yeah, that's right. But if you wrap it in the flag, people get into luge. And that's this will feel, I think, like an Olympics for those Canadians. But I'll tell you, Elliot, that, again, generationally, soccer for teenagers, for 20-somethings, you know, like that whole millennials, my kids, it's their number one game as spectators. Like, there was participation in soccer when I was a kid. There's loads of participation. But because they can watch all those games, all those Premiership games, Champions League games, Serie A, you can watch Bundesliga, you can watch everything. That, if I was betting on a sport, and this is before this World Cup, if I was betting on the future of a sport in North America right now, I'd bet soccer. I really would. I think it's got huge growth potential. It's already really big. So I think they're catching a wave here. And I think by the time we get to 2026, like, this is a way more soccer literate culture than it was, well, in 94, certainly than 86, right?
I mentioned to DeVos, I mean, just the games that are on TV, the World Cups have always been on, but in 86, there's no internet. How do you find out about, like, you're looking in the paper, they would run on my local station in London, they'd run the Saturday scores, and they'd run them by, like, credits in a movie when there's no time left. You'd be like, oh, Aberdeen did this, Celtic did this.
Yeah.
And now you can see every league, and you can be in fantasy leagues, and none of that was available. Even 94, none of these games were on. And
Graham Leggett, right? That's all
yes.
you had.
And God bless him. Vic and Graham Leggett would do the games.
And,
that's,
you know,
it.
And Leggett had his thing on in the weekend mornings. He would do the highlights from all the games. He explained it to people. But he was largely playing to the converted. You're playing to people who
already
knew, right?
Yeah.
This, you know, we're in a different place now.
And but kids couldn't get, how could I get a Gary Lineker shirt in 1980? I could not. And here, mail order, got a shirt in two. And kids wear more of that than they do a lot of the local teams.
You pick a side, you watch every match, you can be as tuned into the Premiership as you are to the NHL.
Now, four players going forward, because even Ellie and I talked about, okay, Andrew Wiggins not playing basketball. I did an interview once with Jonathan DeGuzman when he was playing with Swansea. The only time I ever got to go to Man City, they were there with Swansea, and he was committing to the Dutch team. He said, I think I can make this team.
Didn't work out.
It didn't work out. He played a little bit in the last World Cup. But either way, we've had a lot of Canadians in 20 years who can play for another team because they say, I want to play in big matches, big tournaments, big World Cups, big qualifiers. Now we are that team. We shouldn't have any problem with representation and participation at the highest level. Yeah. There shouldn't be any players not all in to play internationally.
The most
now.
Notable one of those guys would have been Owen Hargreaves, right? Who, you know,
totally.
Who opted
exactly.
out to play for England. I don't blame
yes.
him. I would have done it too.
Absolutely. And same with DeGuzman, probably still made the right call at that point in time.
But I think, with the carrot of a 2026 World Cup and a guarantee, well, it's weird. You know, they actually haven't said we have a guaranteed spot in the tournament, but everybody assumes that. With that happening, with the Canadian Premier League starting, which is an actual place for players to play here, Canadians, it'll be, you know, there is some Canadian content obviously in MLS, but not a lot. So that Canadian Premier League is going to be really important. You know, there's a path suddenly. You know, if you're a 14-year-old Canadian, you know, a superstar soccer
timing's
player,
perfect for
you're
you.
Looking ahead and saying, you know, I can play here, and I can play here, and I can play for the national team under John Herdman, and holy smokes, I could play at home in a World Cup.
What percentage would you give Herdman as being the coach 8 years from now? Almost certainly, though. I mean,
lifetime, right? It's like, Spain fired a coach today, right? Right, yeah. The day before the World Cup.
Yes,
so.
Yes. No scandals. He'll still be there with no scandals.
But I love Herdman, but yeah, that's a lifetime in that kind of level of coaching.
As Jason DeVos pointed out, we're looking to Canada and 2026, but there's a 2022 that these kids have an opportunity, and apparently we have some talent now.
Oh, we do.
That there's a chance that they actually qualify before it expands.
The question has always been, like, we certainly don't have the volume. You know, it's not like Germany where
they need 11.
Germany could put out another 11 and they'd probably finish second in the World Cup. Well, we do have talent. We've had development issues in this country. We've had trouble getting guys to the finish line. We've had commitment issues with the national team where guys said, why would I do this? We've had, the travel issues where if guys do, the best players go overseas and play, and then you're trying to bring them back on an international break, and there are economic issues with the CSA, right? This is going to help on that front as well. So there's been a million reasons why I think the 2022 qualifying will be interesting. Because, Canada's going to be back in CONCACAF, same. We're going to be playing the Costa Ricas and the Honduras and the Americans and the Mexicans. So, you'll get a glimpse of the 2026 team in the 2022 qualifying, whether we get there or not. But I think there's going to be just a different spirit to it. It's been defeatist. And mm-hmm. Why wouldn't it be, yeah. Right? Why wouldn't it be? 8-1 to Honduras. Right, like, why wouldn't it be different?
I had a lot of positivity when I woke up that morning.
Oh, my God.
But I wasn't in Honduras. Oh. And everybody, like you said, everybody's better. Costa Rica's better. Panama's better.
Sure.
Honduras is better. Haiti had a typhoon, and when you're drawing against them, that's bad.
But with our resources, right, we should be in there.
Yeah.
Craig was talking about Canada was in the 94 World Cup. They had a match against Mexico. They get a result in that match, they go through. They would have been in the 94 World Cup. Now, a bunch of things kind of conspired against them. But there was a point there, not that long after 86, where, there were the people, we were close. And then we've been getting farther and farther away and falling behind, while Jamaica qualifies or Costa Rica qualifies or Panama qualifies. And you look and say, those are the teams we used to be able to
hound.
It was us, the Americans and the Mexicans, right? And that's what it should be, economically. That's exactly how it should be weighted.
Stephen Brunt, thank you so much. Love the enthusiasm. Everyone's so excited. It's like a little fervor going on now. It's great. Really.
It is great. Yeah. No, it's going to be a blast. It'll be nothing but fun.
What C-list celebrities will host the draw in late 2025? That's going to be fascinating to see.
Well, in 8 years, you have an opportunity to raise yourself to yes. C-level, and who knows?
I hope so. You got to go from F-level up, Elliot. Come on.
Stephen Brunt, thanks again.
See you, boys.